I'd like to welcome back Isotune Sport as a sponsor of the show for 2023. After over a decade in competitive shooting, I thought I had it all figured out, but I didn't know I was actually missing out on Bluetooth hearing protection. The first time you're on the range and you zero a rifle while listening to a little Chris Stapleton or some Poison, your life will never be the same. I pretty much live with my Isotune Sport calibers in my ears now. Along with going to the range, I wear them to the gym, the grocery store, walking around the neighborhood, everywhere. And I'm never in condition white because the active hearing still works, whether I'm listening to a podcast, a book, or even music. So if I need to hear something, the calibers amplify the sound to my comfort level. And if there's gunfire, like say on the range, it will cut the amplification to protect my hearing. All the benefits of active hearing protection with the modern functionality of Bluetooth to listen to music, podcasts, or even take phone calls. Get yourself some Isotune Sport Ear Pro today and join the Bluetooth revolution. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prep and Press. I'm your host, Dave Hartman. I have a great episode for you today. Our boy Adam Maxwell made Grandmaster in USPSA, and freaking pumped. I'm excited. I'm proud of him. I don't know. Is proud the right word? I feel like proud. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of his accomplishment. I think it's really cool. And this podcast here, Adam tells us exactly how he did it, the training regimen that he did to make Grandmaster. And then at the end, in like the last 10 minutes, he tells you exactly how you can do it as well. I was freaking pumped after talking to Adam about this. And then just now, as I was editing this podcast, I was pumped once more. Truly exciting times. Very inspirational talk from our buddy Adam. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. Enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. We have our buddy A-Max here with us, and Adam has some grand news, some very grand news. A-Max, what have you been up to, man?
I'm a GM, everybody. Woo! I did it!
My mom, my dad, my girlfriend, my dog, good Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so we have sponsors. We have a great topic to talk about here. Our friend Adam Maxwell has made Grandmaster in USPSA in
Limited Optics.
Limited Optics Division. Ooh, nice. So, Adam, I know you've been working on your classifications in USPSA for a long time. Very happy for you, sir. And to do it in this new division is kind of fun too, because there's been a lot of talk about should it be, shouldn't it be, but you did it, man. You did it.
And you can do it too. And we're going to tell you how.
I love it, dude. I love this concept for a show. So this, the idea of like mastery in your craft is something that like greatly appeals to me. It's one of the things I find like so exciting about, marksmanship. For me, for a long time, it was pursuing, longer range shooting-ish in three gun as a skill. And there's just so much to dissect and to open up there. And then, you know, another thing I like to do is obviously podcasting and content creation. I love finding ways to tweak the content that we create here on Prep and Press, and to make audiences happy. And then use those indications that the audience is happy to make better stuff in the future. So I like that idea of like refining things. And I feel like pursuing a classification in USPSA is like the perfect illustration of how you can start from crap and with focused effort get to a level of mastery.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say it's probably a very canned example of all that. And I think it kind of, I don't know, it's been a journey. And I think, unless you're just naturally very athletic, I think it's a journey for anyone. So, I mean, there was a long time participating in the sport where I wasn't a USPSA member, even though I was shooting USPSA. I was one of these people that was not a member out of protest. And this is around circa 2008, to give you an idea. Okay, so there was a long period of time where I was not an active USPSA member. In my member number wasn't active, even though I was shooting every week.
Dude, I just re-upped my membership and it said that I've got this little badge that I've been a member for 10 years now.
Well, look at you.
Where did the time go?
I know.
Right? Holy cow.
But, and a lot of that was around participation in three gun. Three gun's been my primary sport for over 10 years now. My classification in USPSA just wasn't important to me until really I became an industry person. Was talking on product to people, and then also now in a law enforcement sales role, training people on product. In that realm, it's kind of like especially in kind of that institutional inertia, kind of an elitist mindset. Like, who are you to talk about this to us? Is very much alive there, you know, and that's where you see guys who are like, well, I was this many years CAG and I was this many years special forces and I was in the sheriff's office for this month. I mean, those are, you know, there's a lot of those training personalities out there.
I have a question on that.
Yeah.
So like a lot of those people at the highest level do shoot, or I guess not a lot, but at the highest level, there's people that do shoot three gun, USPSA, things like that. They see mm-hmm. the value in it. Mm-hmm. And we shoot with a lot of those people and we know them by name because they are a handful, right?
Yep.
They're right. Yeah. However, I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but people that don't even shoot USPSA will understand that master or grandmaster is a level of achievement and I guess adds like credibility. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Like what is the reaction from like the law enforcement, the military set, which are typically your customers in your place of business?
Like I say, I mean, once you're at that level, I mean, master, grandmaster just kind of has contextual or, what's the word I'm looking for? An association with it. Like, oh, that must be a pretty big deal. Even if they don't participate in the sport, they're at least aware of it.
Well, there's like the dictionary definition, and then they're very similar to like chess designations as well.
Like, I don't know anything about karate, but I know a black belt's a big deal. I couldn't tell you what a purple belt is,
but I
know a black belt is the best.
Yeah, that's the one thing when my buddy starts talking about like jujitsu or what's the other one he does? It's not taekwondo. I forgot, but it's the elbow and the shin striking one. I forgot which one that is. But he tells me like his level of achievement and as like I'm gauging his context clues, like should I be happy or is right. this a sad story? Like I don't know what those know, but I know karate kid got a black belt. So
yep. When I took a class, and a very influential person in my life has been Steve Anderson of Anderson Shooting. And one of his things is he makes the point of a lot of people will poke fun at paper GMs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they'll be like, well, he's just a paper GM, he's not a real one. He's like, hey, if you're going to call someone a paper GM, you better be a GM yourself, because the sport defined what GM is and this person did it. And if you can't do it too, like who are you really to say they didn't or didn't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that kind of in my head. And then I would go to a class with some of these more martial instructors. And when they give their bio, they read, you know, and a lot of them rattle off, oh yeah, and I used to shoot, you know, IPSC, you know, master class okay. But in the class, they would sprack some stuff about the competition world that was 15 years out of date and not anywhere close to anything relevant to what's going on now. But me sitting there as a B class shooter, who am I to tell that they don't know what they're talking about?
Well, that's that is an interesting thing about the USPSA classification is that like they don't take it away, right? So like if you achieve the GM and then actually here's another fun one. I know people that are PCC GMs and they leave the PCC out of I'm a GM. when they speak, right?
They take it away. These people, I was, and they get the same reaction from the students. But so that was part of my motivation where it's like, okay, I bring it at a decently high level in this sport. It wasn't important to me before, but it is now. This is something I want to do. And it started, I would say it's been about a 3-year journey for me. But it started as USPSA is not my primary sport. Three guns, my primary sport. So I set the goal as master. I was like, well, I could be a GM if USPSA was my primary sport, but it's not. So setting a realistic goal at master and realistically for what I'm going for, people, I'm going to get the same reaction, whether I say master or grandmaster, unless people actually know what a grandmaster is. And so I set that journey in motion, which for those keeping score at home was long before anyone was talking about limited optics at home. Mm-hmm. I started it in limited, in iron sight limited, because looking at my scores, I thought that was the closest jump that I could do, and still kind of be cross training in what I was actively doing in three gun.
Do you have classifications in anything else, in any other division?
Yeah, I'm classified in limited 10, single stack, limited optics, and open.
So can you run down the classifications in each?
When I started, I was B in everything.
Okay.
Now,
I'm going to show my ignorance here, but maybe some other people have the same question. If you're a B class limited, you're not automatically B class in single stack, right?
Well, that's why I'm choosing to answer the question in this way.
Oh, okay.
I was B class in everything legitimately. And when I started moving up, I organically moved up to A class in single stack, limited, and carry optics.
Organically being like through matches?
Yeah, like I shot classifiers that would move me up.
Oh.
But the way the rules are written, you can't be more than one level lower in classification than your highest. So that's where like a PTC grandmaster can't be anything less than master in any gun they shoot, no matter what.
So does that mean then if you get like a PCC? Oh, so let me run it back to you. So now that you're a limited optics grandmaster, does that mean you're a limited master as well?
Yeah, that pulled them all up. But I already legitimately shot master and limited and single stack.
Oh.
Because I kind of flip-flopped a little bit along the way there, just switching guns like I do, just being an enthusiast. So I legitimately shot enough classifying scores in limited and single stack to be master. And then I was working on the same thing in carry optics before limited optics became a thing. But that's really in place. So if you got like, this isn't the case, Rob's not watching this anyway, but Rob Latham, grandmaster, never shot a wheel gun in his life.
Mm-hmm.
He probably has, but if he all of a sudden decides to show up with a revolver and, oh, I'm classified C in revolver. No, you're not, or same thing like Ben Steger. Okay. Ben Steger, when he was shooting, all right, grandmaster in production, but he's never shot a single stack gun in his life. He goes to single stack nationals. No, dude. You're shooting with the masters. You're not like beating up on the C class shooters. That's the intent of the rule, or the way it's written. So like all my scores got pulled up to master when I made grandmaster. But like you say, I legitimately shot master scores in a couple other divisions as well. That's how it goes. Now, the other thing about it is
I have a question on that. Yeah. So I want to come back to that real quick, but I need to look up the scores from Carry Optics Nationals.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, the way it works is it's your initial four. If you've never shot that division before, your initial four classifier scores, which is either a classifier at a match, a club match, or any match, or it's your finish, your percentage finish at a level two or a level three match if there are a certain number of, I believe it's three GMs in your division. So kind of like we saw in USSL, you have to have a certain number of pros to set the curve. And if there's enough pros to set the curve, then your score will count as a classifier. But if you're shooting single stack and no GMs show up, it doesn't matter if you win. That doesn't count as a score because not enough people showed up in that division. Mm. So, and then it's your rolling average. It's your best six of your most recent eight.
And classifiers?
So, yeah, classifiers. And so the challenge is you got to shoot enough of these scores at this level. You got to shoot enough of these scores at this level without dumpster fires that will also count against you. Now, there's a certain level that you're basically anything. Once you have a classification, anything below, anything 5% below the level that you're currently at won't count. So if you're a B level shooter and you shoot a D level score or a zero, that doesn't count against your rolling average.
Interesting.
The hardest part of my journey being a B class shooter trying to go up to this level. Okay. So all of a sudden I would bump up to A. Okay. So I'm an A class shooter trying to get master scores. So I would get some master scores, but I would also get some high B scores and those would count too.
Mm.
That pulls your average. So that's the hard part is getting.
Yeah. So the hard part is like being consistently good, right?
Yeah.
It's not enough to pull a hero run or pull six hero runs. You got to be consistently a hero.
You got to be able to do it on demand You got to be able to do it on demand enough times that your rolling average is that high,
which being able to do it on demand is like the whole point of the sport, right?
Right.
Like that's how this sport starts. It's the reason we don't get like practice runs and shit like that.
Right. And I would argue that technical skills wise, there is no difference. There's nothing that a grandmaster has that an A-class shooter doesn't have in technical skills. Everything that happens after A-class is mental discipline and execution.
I want to talk about that. But I have one question on the classification system before we do. So USPSA Carry Optics Nationals just happened a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The top 13 people, 12 of them were GMs.
Mm-hmm.
One person was unclassified.
Mm-hmm.
That was Christian Saylor, and he won the match.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
So Christian Saylor has not shot enough Carry Optics classifiers to be classified in that division.
But if he I'm starting a bunch of sentences at the same time. Do you know if he's a grandmaster or a master or classified in some other way in a different division?
Oh yeah, he's grandmaster in open.
Right. Okay, that's what I thought. So then probably would he not then be at least master in this? And
He would be master if he shot four classifier scores. No matter what you shot, he would have to shoot four classifier scores.
Yeah.
And then they would be like, no, that's too low. You bump
up. You can still sandbag if it's a new division, right? Or you're just considered not classified yet, right?
Yeah, essentially. Okay. But you know, as soon as he shoots enough scores, he's gonna be at least master, if not grandmaster, and he's probably going to be a grandmaster.
Yeah.
He just hasn't participated in that division enough in the eyes of USPSA to be classified by the numbers.
Got it. So there's nothing nefarious happening. It's just he hasn't shot enough Carry Optics to be ranked yet. Okay.
Like a lot of those guys, you know, they have whatever division they focus on. I think he focuses on open.
Mm-hmm.
So he has whatever division he focuses on. But they'll switch in the lead up to and to participate in a nationals, especially one like Carry Optics Nationals, where it's probably the biggest match of the year, you know, right? Like there's a ton of heat. Everybody's there.
500 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. 500.
Like that many people isn't showing up to multi-gun nationals. That number of people isn't showing up to Iron Sight Nationals.
Yes.
But he will probably be at Iron Sight Nationals shooting a gun. It's just he's going to, at some point before the match, he's just going to put his open gun down and pick up whatever gun he wants to shoot.
It's like last year we talked about single stack nationals, right? Like that's a great example because there are a ton of people that typically shoot limited or typically shoot open, but will pick up the single stack for, you know, a couple weeks.
Especially when it used to be in Illinois and it was like the first like nationals of the year. Like a lot of people would shoot single stack right away in the spring and then they put it away for the rest of the year and they shoot whatever division they care about.
Gotcha.
But there's a lot of people who like traveling the national circuit. They shoot the other guns enough that they can go to the nationals.
Yeah. That's
what they like to do.
Right.
Where there's others who focus on, you know, carry optics is my division. We were seeing more of the youngest generation in our sport. I'm a carry optics guy. I'm going to shoot carry optics at every area match and carry optics nationals. And they don't really care about Iron Sight nationals. You know, my friend Jake from work, he gives no craps about Iron Sight nationals, but he wants to shoot every area match he can get to and carry optics nationals because he likes to shoot the crap out of a Shadow 2.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's good that there are those different types of strategies and that you can slice this game any way you want, right? And then there's also people that, you know, are like, okay, I'm gonna carry an Iron Sight gun, and that's all I'm gonna shoot is production, or all I'm gonna shoot is single stack, or I'm gonna carry a dot gun, so that's all I'm gonna shoot. And I think that it's good that we now have limited optics because it does add another option for shooting.
I'm a huge proponent of limited optics, but like. I'm not, but say I was B in carry optics. Well, now that I or someone like me can shoot Grandmaster with a single stack gun, but I choose to shoot a carry optics gun, I shouldn't be able, where some might say, well, you're a paper GM in carry optics. Well, yes, but I also have the skills in the game that it's not fair for me to go up against a B shooter. That's disingenuous to anyone shooting B. That a grandmaster who just doesn't shoot this gun very often is going to go and win their trophy.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's good that you get bumped in every division, and it's plenty hard. You know, it's plenty hard the way it is. So let's
talk about the technical versus the mental skills.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about that? Because I guess like. You know, I kind of think like once you have like the mechanics down in three gun, like the rest is just like figuring out where the speed is. But I'm not well versed in the specific technical things that it takes to be a grandmaster or takes to be A class or whatever in USPSA. Cause I think I've only shot like a few classifiers in my life and not enough to be classified.
Well, I think the best way, the explanation that resonated with me is, this is again a Steve Anderson thing, but he said, because he teaches the mental game, that's what he teaches. Mm-hmm. So he says that essentially the mental component of whatever level you're shooting at is roughly equivalent to your classification. So again, so like if you're shooting master, you're at the 90th percentile of the sport. So to execute at the 90th percentile percentile of the sport, that game is 90% mental. If you're not there, if you're at a B level, okay, well, your game is probably 60% mental, and then there's 40% you hitting that reload and your draw and your footwork and all that. Like, you have some technical skills that you got to get right in addition to the mental game to execute at a 60% level. But as we perfect the skills, and the skills, especially in USPSA, you have a draw, you have a reload, you have a sight picture, and you have a trigger press. And then you have some movement, all right? Once you have all those things, it's trying to execute those things as efficiently as possible. And that gets into, essentially, how do you execute this string of things? And a stage, like when you watch people at the high level shoot a stage, anybody who's doing it at a high level, they're doing it subconsciously. So they formulated a plan. We talk about stage planning a lot. Okay, so they formulated a plan, they memorized it, and then they did it from memory. So essentially those people have touched on the ability to come up with a plan, memorize it, and then hit print. and execute it at the level, execute it exactly as they perceived it in their mind.
Which is 100% different than perceiving it as you're perceiving it at the time that you're shooting it.
Yeah.
You're still taking in data and processing it rather than just running that program.
Yeah. Hunting and pecking needs not apply. Like, remember the jungle runs from the Trigun and stuff like that we do in the Midwest here. Nobody won those jungle runs hunting and pecking their way through there. They knew exactly where each target was and where they were going to shoot it from. And they just did that. Now there's a level of, you can step back from that and be successful. Like you can be like, I think there was one, you know, something might surprise you or something like that. But okay. But you're executing 95% on that. The person who won it, they knew where they all were and they hit their spots and they hit all those targets. They didn't go through there finding them. So the second that you were consciously finding targets or looking for them, that's where you're giving time up to somebody who is executing at the grandmaster level. I would say A and B class shooters are very close together. And those are also kind of who you encounter at the club level, or at least at my club. So they'll say, you know, they'll say things like, well, this is a memory stage. Well, all stages are memory stages. If you're differentiating between the two, that's where I beat you, you know?
Right.
Like, you know? So that's kind of where that is that mental process of having a process of getting your head in the game and then being able to execute at the top level at your best on demand is where it is. And like the difference between A and masterclass shooters is their execution on demand. Like how often do they actually execute at that level, or do they throw a B score? And then kind of like where I got a taste of like, man, I could actually be a grandmaster is like in the process of getting master, you're going to throw some GM scores.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to get a taste of, oh, that's GM, huh? And it doesn't feel as fast as you would think it is. Because like from the bottom looking up, they just look like superhuman people. Like, oh, man, this just got to be the – like – like it was like the old cartoons we used to watch where it's just like a dust cloud and bullets come out. Right. Like, but then when you like get a taste of it, like you felt you executed your plan and you executed at your level and your comfortable level of subconscious skill. And then look at the timer and the timer says that's a GM run. Like, mm-hmm. Oh,
and well, so I think that's a good place to transition just a little bit here. So we talked about like what a GM is. We've defined that. We've talked about like the difference between like a GM and an A class is all mental. Mm-hmm. So let's give something to the audience here. One of the things that you said before we started was like, we want to show that like, this is something that you can do, that you listening, you can be a GM, and this is something that you can achieve. So I know that, I know that you set out to become a master several years ago for these reasons, and then didn't really pay attention to the progression. So time has passed for me. I just watched Interstellar last night. So time has passed for me, and you're all grown up. You're all grown up into a GM. And so I didn't see the process in between. So let's talk about that process, because I think you can really provide a lot of value to the listener here and to me selfishly. So let's talk about like deciding you want that thing. And then I would assume there's some sort of plan, right? Like how did you make that plan and then put that plan into effect?
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, the primary reason that I want to talk about this and I want to put it out on your show is to show people that this is something you can do. Okay. GMs are not superhuman people. And so my message to you is not, haha, I did it. Look at me. It's, well, I could do it. And if you want to, you can too. And here's how. Nice. So yeah, I set out to do it following kind of some of the known paths, and a lot of it's dry fire. Okay.
So let's talk about that real quick. Let's really break it down. You say like following the known paths, which is dry fire. So like that to me is like, you just go get better.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
I bought all three of Steve Anderson's books and I was primarily dry firing the first 24 drills in his first book. And seeing progress on that. Another big thing in that program is journaling. So recording what you're doing and what happened. That's based a lot upon a book that we've probably referenced before, but with Winning in Mind.
Mm-hmm.
That book was written by Lanny Bassum, who's a master in another sport, and now is a consultant for athletes. He won't take your business. He won't let you pay him $2,000 an hour unless you're doing a performance journal.
Oh, wow.
Because to him, if it's not important enough to you to write down, it's not important enough to him to give you his time. So I was dry firing these drills at kind of a level and recording, and I was seeing some results. And then when I decided that I want to hit a specific level, Steve will pretty much tell you, if you do these drills once a day, you'll hit whatever level you want in 9 months or whatever it is. If you do the whole program, if you moderate the program, you'll get moderated results. Okay. Well, I was moderating the program because 6 months out of the year, I'm shooting 3 gun.
Right.
Okay. So, it would kind of, and just kind of in my head, I was like, this was kind of my winter project. Cause you know, 3 gun stops here when the weather gets cold. But we have a lot of indoor USPSA, and it's an easy thing to work on inside. Like 3 guns harder to dry fire inside cause the guns are so heavy. It's not that hard to dry fire a pistol for extended periods of time. So it was kind of also transitional, like, and cross training is like, this is gonna be my winter project. So for this span of time, I'm going to focus on this gun and do this amount of stuff to get to this level. And I should hit it sometime this winter. So that winter I was like, all right, I'm tired of shooting my open pistol. All right, I'm gonna switch to an iron sighted gun for the winter. Cross train, so I'm just gonna focus on my limited gun. I'm gonna do these drills. I'm gonna dry fire these drills works out to be about a half hour or 45 minutes for me. And I'm gonna do this amount of these drills per day until I get this, and I'm gonna have this number of at bats during the winter. It works out to be like eight or 10 at bats, where I know there's gonna be classifier stages. And I should be able to get it done in that winter. lo and behold, I still had some work to do on the mental game. Didn't get it done that winter. But it's 3 gun season now. Switched back over to 3 gun. And came around. So I got up to A. I was essentially a high A shooter in limited. Switched to 3 gun. That next winter came around. Went at it again. Still had some work to do, you know, shot some master level scores, but also shot some low B scores. So I'm still hovering. Didn't get it done that year either. And it's becoming more and more important to me. So going into last year, I'm like, okay, I really want to do it. Well, and then also I'm starting to think about, well, you're kind of playing with, you got this rolling average going on, right? So you'll shoot a high one, you'll shoot a low one. You'll shoot a high one, you shoot a low one. So the thought is also out there of like, okay, well, I know I'm executing at a master level, but how do I get it to stick at a master level? So then I switched to single stack, and the thought being that, actually, I think I switched to carry optics because we came out with the Defender series. So I switched to carry optics and was like, all right, I'm going to pick a new division that I'm not classified in at all. And I'm going to try and stick those first four. Those first six at a high level. I won't have any low scores pulling my average down. Okay, I did that.
It's fun. It's funny how, like, there's a path and a program, but we as monkey humans still try to find like a little bit of a shortcut, try to make the path shorter, try to reinvent the wheel type of thing, and negotiate with ourselves.
Yeah.
It's so funny how we do that.
What's even funnier. So I come off a whole summer shooting my open minor gun in 3-gun. I switch to a carry optics gun. I'm dry firing the hell out of it, shooting it at these matches, doing well. But at Vortex, we have a lot of the indoor matches are at Vortex in the winter because we have this awesome indoor facility.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, also being an employee, I have the opportunity to shoot it twice. You know, there's the Friday night where we shoot employees because that opens up slots to the public on Saturday because there's a limited amount. Well, and they make you switch guns like other classes, other clubs do. You can't shoot the same gun. Okay. So you sign up as carry optics on Friday night, and then banking on some no shows for Saturday, you sign up on another division. We would sign up for another division on Saturday. Okay, so I know because the snowstorm's coming in and nobody shows up when it snows, I'm banking on there being an opening on Saturday. Well, here's an opportunity to get 2 more classifier stages, but I have to shoot a different division. Well, what division is closest to what I'm working on? I haven't touched a limited gun in 8 months. But I shoot, you know, the one I'm working on is carry optics. That's the one I'm going to shoot first. Shoot a couple lame A scores in that. Show up with my limited gun. The next day, shoot the same thing. Master Grandmaster score.
Oh.
Cold. Hadn't shot my limited gun at all. Completely different holster. Completely different gun. 40 and 9 millimeter. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
I guess we're going back to limited.
Well, no, I stayed on carry optics, and then the next month did it again. And then I was like, oh, dang it. And then I think I shot enough master scores to push master over the line.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, well, this is going well. I better get my single stack gun out. And then I shot single stack the rest of the year, and I basically said I was gonna stay on it until I got it.
Mm-hmm.
So
was real quick, I want to pause you there. Was the difference points? Like, are you getting like more points with major than with minor, or like would that really even matter since you're shooting 2 different divisions?
No, I think like going back to the mental aspect of it, what you're fighting is that you as an intelligent person know this is the stage that counts. I can't screw this up. This is the one. I don't care how any of these other stages go. I want a good classifier for it. That's what I got for this morning.
I got a hero this one.
Yeah. And that's where you choke.
So
when I switched guns, I was going into that subconscious place easier. So it's like, okay, I have no expectation of executing. I just want to shoot today for the reps to show up with my friends. We're just gonna throw this thing up here and see what happens.
Because this is my limited gun. I'm trying to get classified in carry optics.
Right. And then boom, GM. And then that's also the aha moment of like, wait, are you kidding me? That's a GM run. Like, that felt mortal. I just do that all the time. Well, if I just do that all the time, and that was a GM run, well, why don't I just shoot like that all the time? And so
is that a mental breakthrough, or is that okay.
100%.
So when you're talking about like the difference between A class and GM
once you know what something feels like, in your mind's eye, you can replicate that again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, I don't have to reach some level of achievement that I haven't done before. I just have to do what I already did again. Mm. I just have to do that. What I just did, now I just got to do that again and again and again and again. Well, what, and then this is where the journaling comes in. It's like, well, what went right? What went right there that got me the result that I wanted? And how do I replicate that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, and then that's kind of where, especially, you know, culturally people focus on the negative, and it's human nature, right? You shoot five alphas and one delta. You're going to, well, what happened on the delta? It's more, well, what went right on the five alphas, and how do I do more alphas? And, you know, think about more alphas, not less deltas. If you think about less deltas, yeah, you're going to be living in the deltas.
Don't spill that milk.
Yeah. Right. So, and that's where that came from. And then it was like, okay, so this is mortal level skill, and I do know how to do this, and I can replicate this. And that's where I set on to, I was going to do 2-a-day dry fire. I was going to dry fire in the morning and the evening. I was working out twice a day too. So I was doing 2 workouts, 2 dry fires every day until I got it. Now, there's only a certain amount of time in the day. People are like, well, I can't do that. Well, I couldn't either. Okay, so one of those workouts fell off the schedule too. But 2 dry fires a day, no matter what. And, you know, like you know, and some people probably know, I travel a lot for work. The gun came with. Even if it was a shooting trip or not, checking a gun, bringing the belt, hotel room, twice a day, no excuses, unless I was tired enough to the point where I was worried I was going to drop the gun, which was rare, but did happen. But it's like 2-a-days, no matter what. And what's the magic of 2-a-days? Again, going to talk, you know, crediting my mentor here. But he, you know, Steve says, well, when you go to 2-a-days, what's that doing for you? That's putting the gun in your hand, and you're going through that process multiple times in a day. And that's the difference between being able to do it and being able to do it on demand, because you're normalizing this thing. When you do it 2-a-days, it's easier to do 100% of your limited human function cold on demand, because it's a more normal thing. So I set the goal of 2-a-day dry fire until I get it. Then
let me ask you real quick. So like you said, like you do it even if you're tired or didn't want to, unless you were going to drop the gun. Are there bad reps in dry fire? Like, is there a point where you're just like, I got to quit now, 'cause I'm totally boning this? Or is it just any time with the gun in your hand is good?
No, there are bad reps, but the interesting thing is the days that you have the breakthroughs are the days that you forced yourself to do it, and you didn't want to, because you kind of go to that subconscious place of you're kind of phoning it in, and then something magical happened by accident. You know, your subconscious kind of, your body won't let you be inefficient. So your subconscious will do something different. You'd be like, wait, Oh, that was new. Well, that's cool. Write that down.
Well, you're also taking the pressure off of it too, 'cause like, I don't feel good today, so I don't have these grand expectations on myself.
Right. And that's the day. Oh, if I put my thumb this way, you know, if I focus on indexing the gun this way. Oh, okay. So you realize that, you wrote it down, and then when you came back to it later that day or the next day, you're like, okay, now we're going to focus on that. That's what we do now, and that's an improvement.
So you're not just doing everything the same old way you've always done it. You're testing and trying new things out.
Yeah. So it's a lot of it's part-time based. So, you know, there's a set number of drills. You start at a part-time, and then you take a 10th off. And then once you're comfortable at that level, you take a 10th off, and then you take a 10th off, and then you take a 10th off, and then you take a 10th off, until you get down to pretty small numbers. And then then you're confirming it in live fire. But for the most part, it's all in dry fire. I didn't learn anything in live fire that I didn't get out of dry fire.
I was smiling because I was thinking about whomever is in your hotel room next to you just constantly hearing beep, clack, clack, beep, clack, clack.
Yeah. Yeah. In hotel rooms, I don't care who that is. In my house, I'm more more quiet in the morning, so I don't always...
Ah, yeah, yeah.
But
okay, so we talked about like the, you know, setting out the plan, and then like basically you just chose to do Steve Anderson's Dry Fire books. Yeah, and when you made,
that's who did it for me.
I'm sorry.
So there's other people too that have programs that work. His worked for me,
right? Yeah, definitely not, you know, taking anything away from anyone else. I'm sure there's other great books out there, but those are the ones you used. I lost my train of thought. So you chose those three books. You did the reps from those three books. When was there like a breakthrough for you in dry fire where you saw that like those two-a-days were making a difference, or did you see that on the range?
I was seeing it in dry fire for sure, but it was match scores. It was match scores and it was classifier scores. I was hitting higher level classification scores and occasional GM scores with an increasing amount of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the critical point. And I think this is the critical point for anybody, is I decided to go all in. That was where I decided I'm doing this at this level every day until I get it. This is a foregone conclusion. It is going to happen. I know how to do this, and these are the things required. I'm going all in. So I remember specifically sitting down in my basement where all my gun stuff is. And like I'm fortunate that I have access to more ammo than most people, but not as much as people would think, and not as much as some people have, but I have some. And I looked around and I was like, I am going to throw all the ammo I have at this. I know how much that is, spread it out this amount of time. So I'm like, I'm all in. I'm dry firing this much. I'm going to live fire this much. And I'm going to sustain that pace forever. But I think you have to be all in, because all in is a mental state, right? So what I actually had to contribute, like the actual resources I had, are inconsequential, because people have done it with more and they've done it with less, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's what was it? Was it Basham's book where he was talking about, like, I think it was the Vietnamese rifle team where they had like around a week or something like that, and everything else was dry fire.
Yeah. Like that's what they had, but they were giving their all. And so I did actually start live firing once a day. So one of my dry fires a day turned into a live fire a day. That was my all in. That's like, okay, well, I have some resources to devote to live fire, so I'm going to live fire too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
everybody's all in is different, right? So
right.
It's right.
Because I mean, how many people do we know? Like, well, I got kids. Well, I got, you know, this, I got that, and I can't travel to big matches. And it's like, whatever your all in is, you have to be all in. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to be, that's fine. But you know, if you're moderating the program, you're going to get moderated results.
You know? Yeah. The biggest example that stands out for me, and he's said this on the show, so I don't think I'm speaking out of school here, but is our buddy Scott Green, who mm-hmm. is an incredible shooter, mm-hmm. super top level, but does not have a ton of ammo. So he dry fires and saves the ammo for club matches and major matches.
Mm-hmm.
So his all in is different, right?
Yep.
He's still doing the work, but that work looks different than it would for someone with, you know, like a factory sponsor or a bunch of disposable income where they can purchase pallets of ammunition. So mm-hmm. again, it looks different for everyone. So don't let that preclude you from it. Like,
for example,
this podcast here started with like a $60 microphone. This is a very expensive microphone, but it started with a $60 microphone, and you can do it with much less nowadays.
Yeah. And Scott's never had access, to my knowledge, he's never had access to the resources that I have. And he did it a lot sooner than I did. Mm-hmm. But he went all in on it a lot sooner than I did too. And, yes. And you know, I think also he's a bit more of an athlete than I am, to be completely honest. So I think,
yeah, I mean, he played baseball. Baseball's yeah. a visual game, right?
Yeah. His competitive mindset and his visual acuity was very sharp and very switched on when he found this sport. So I think he found this level of this sport a lot sooner than I did, which is not to take away from him. It's just like, I think it
shows there's different paths.
Well, it's just, yeah. And there's lots of people who are like, oh, well, I can't do it. I'm too old now. Oh, I can't do it. Oh, I wish I would have started earlier. Oh man, I wish I had access to this gun or, this ammo, or if I had more range access, like I am fortunate enough that I have a lot of range access. Range access isn't what did it for me.
Right.
But I had it. So I used it, but the mental component of it is all the mundane reps in dry fire, and then bringing that to the range.
Mm-hmm. So we got about 10-12 minutes to go here to wrap up, but I want to talk about encouraging the folks that are listening to commit to a goal and to pursue that goal. And then I know we've got a little story to tell that's kind of put a monkey wrench in the GM-ness for a while here. So if you had to lay out like a 5 or 6 minute plan for someone who maybe they want to GM their GM card, maybe they want to be a master, maybe they want to excel in three gun, maybe they want to excel in NRL hunter,
yeah,
and reach maybe top levels of the game.
Yeah. Yep.
Like how would you recommend, like, this is a, you know, these are the 5 steps you need to do. And obviously each step is going to have 100 steps under it. But like, what are the main moves they should make to get moving in that direction that's going to take them to where they want to be?
I think you need to define what your success is, what you want it to look like. It doesn't have to be a win, because only one person can win. But, you know, like whatever your goal is. And then you need to figure out what characteristics are of a person who does that.
Mm.
So if I want to shoot, if I want to be in the 70th percentile of a three gun match, well, look at who's there and hitting at that level. What are those people doing? You know, and work on that list. And then of those things, which of those are you not doing? You need to start doing them. Which of those do you need to improve on, and then actively work on improving them? So like the fun thing to make fun of GMs on is they take a long time to make ready, right? And so, you know, it's at the club level, especially, like, oh, you know, GMs are always taking too long to make ready. Well, that's kind
of guilty of that.
Yeah, but that's kind of backwards, right? Because it's like, that dude's a GM and he thinks that's important. I wonder why he does that. Maybe I should do that. You know, and not to say that like the time component is what makes, but it's like, well, why is he doing that? Well, he's doing that because he's visualizing the whole stage to do it subconsciously. But it's you know, a lot of times mid packers are trying to cut down people who are at a higher level, like, oh well, but it's like, instead of asking the question, well, why does that person do that? And would that help me? You know, I think that's the key. So it's like,
that's a good point for like all areas of life. Yeah. Right. And, I mentioned this, recently on a podcast that I was on, but it's called the tall poppy syndrome, right? When you're trying to knock down people that are trying to do extraordinary things.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. It's the same thing in like in anywhere in life. Like if you're trying to prove yourself physically and the people in your life are not physical, then they, you know, try to give you a hard time for it. If you're not, if you choose not to drink and people are drinking, they give you a hard time for it. It's like all those things that you try to improve about yourself, someone's going to try to knock you down for it. And the GM make ready is like an example of that. But that is, those are the reasons for success. So if you want to also be successful, do those things.
Right. And so it's like, you know, a good example, well, my stage plan always goes to shit. You know, as soon as the buzzer goes off, I don't know what I'm doing. okay, well, you've identified that you can't hold on to a stage plan, so you need to put more effort into a stage planning. Whereas people at a higher level, you know, if I'm going to a major match, I am showing up the day before and I'm making sure I have enough daylight time to look at all the stages and have a plan and a process. My good friend Ruben doesn't need to do that. He only needs to see the stages he's shooting tomorrow. I am not comfortable until I see them all, you know? Mm-hmm. but, you know, all of us who are comfortable in executing at a higher level, we're all making sure that we're there and planning. People who have the problem of, man, my stage plan always goes to shit. Well, how much time did you spend making a stage plan? Well, not very much.
Well, I don't spend much time doing it because it always goes to shit. Or does it go to shit because you don't spend much time doing it?
Right. And so it's like, you know, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to identify those things. It's like, oh, well, you know, if my stage plans aren't really awesome, I need to work harder on having a stage plan. And that's how you're going to get to whatever level you're at.
Okay.
Or you want
to. All right. So we're defining our goal and we're defining the characteristics of people who have achieved that goal.
Yep.
What's next?
You don't have to have the best equipment. You do have to have equipment you like.
Okay.
So if you have a piece of gear that you don't like, you need to get rid of it and get whatever you know to be the right thing. Not saying you need to have the best, but you need to have equipment you like because you're going to spend a lot of time with it.
Mm. I think that's a Patrick Kellyism, right? Like the guy that comes with a new pistol every time is not going to be as good as the guy who comes with a pistol or mm-hmm. a different or the same pistol every time. But they're going to come because they got that new thing. So like, just go to the range anyway. Now that said, like, I'm sure you do need to get reps, but you need to make sure that it's something you want to enjoy and use again and again. I get that.
Yeah. Right. Cause you're going to spend a lot of time with it. So it's something you like, you gotta know what the right piece, you don't have to get into the weeds on having all the best things, but you need to have the equipment necessary. So a good example would be shotgun caddies. If you're going to a match that has a long jungle run, you need to have enough caddies to do that stage,
right?
Or have provisions for borrowing them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need the best caddies, but you do need enough caddies to carry enough shells.
Yep.
You don't need to have all the choke tubes. You should probably have more than IC.
Hey.
You don't need to be the best long range shooter in the world. You do need to have a good zero, and you do need to understand what the muzzle velocity is of your cartridge and what that looks like ballistically at different distances. You know, so you don't need to be the best. You don't have to have everything, but there are critical components that you do need, or you're going to plateau at a certain level of frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a good point. Like, you know, all the things we've talked about are things that you can do yourself, but your equipment does need to be like an acceptable level of good. And then from there you take it. Mm-hmm. Now I see, especially in three gun, a lot of people will, you know, focus on the equipment. I know several people that have like 30 muzzle devices and, you know, 29 of them are sitting in the drawer, and the one they don't like, excuse me, the 28th one they don't like would be fine for me. And I just want to go shoot, you know, so there's an acceptable level of good. And, as a book I lent you recently, the maximizer versus satisficer thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the satisficer, in the end, is more happy with their outcome. The maximizer is never happy with their outcome. And if you're constantly tweaking this and that and the other thing on your gun and your equipment and everything, you're never going to spend the time practicing to get good at it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the last one, just because we're running out of time here, is I would surround yourself with people as much as you can that have similar goal to you. So if the people in your group are kind of stuck at the level that you're not happy with, you need to find the people who are at the level you want to be at and shoot with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the three gun world, I mean, like the Vortex squad, we're pretty open to other people shooting with us. Now there's lots of, you know, everybody can't be on our squad just because the squad will land so many slots. But like, if you see an opportunity to shoot with somebody who's at the level you wanted to shoot at, squad with that person, right? I got the chance to squad with Rob Latham, and I took it.
Nice.
And I didn't hump his leg, but I definitely asked him certain questions throughout the weekend. And
did he hump your leg?
No. Oh. He's low T. He's just not into that anymore. but you know what? I mean, got some information from him that you wouldn't hear otherwise, you know, and just kind of the environment in that squad, you know, if you kind of shoot with a bunch of degenerates that aren't really trying hard and don't, you know, particularly shoot very well, well, guess what? It's going to be hard for you to do that, you know?
And that's the same thing in all life, right? Like if you're, you know, you're trying to be a spiritual person, but you're hanging out around with people who are screwing around all weekend, you're going to screw around all weekend. So yeah, totally get it. And you know, finances, everything, right? Fitness, like it all matters.
Right. And like, well, kind of going into what you want to talk about here too. Like I also, I've kind of have this like stoic philosophy, you know, like time is fleeting, right? Like it's, you know, and so like when I was getting this level of performance that I wanted, now the question is, so it's like, all right, I know how to shoot at this level. How do I hold on to it long enough to get the right number of scores? Cause like you become a grandmaster before you become a grandmaster. That's like, you are executing at this level long before you get enough scores, that USPSA says you are. So it's like, well, I achieved the level I wanted. Now I got to maintain and execute at this level for this amount of time, because there's no guarantee. I mean, every year my program is a little bit different. Every year my resources are a little bit different. Every year my schedule is a little bit different. There's no guarantee that next year is going to be like this year. Mm-hmm. So if you're at this level, you got to get it done this year. Like, I mean, there is no, you know, what if my job changes and I can't participate as much as I did this year? What if there's an ammo shortage? What if, the matches get canceled? What if COVID happens again? Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna maintain this thing through another, like COVID too. Like,
what if you get in a motorcycle accident?
Yeah. What if you get hit by a bus?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like break your wrist, or like, what if you get a serious injury? I'm middle-aged, you know, my at some point my eyesight is going to start fading, not soon, but some point it
will.
So you can't take that for granted. And so that was part of my motivation too. That's what got me up at 5 a.m. and that's what kept me up at 10 p.m. working on this, is because like there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to maintain this for any amount of time. And I actually had the opportunity. This is a funny story, so I'll tell you. But like when I actually got it done, Tanfo Timmy starts DM messaging me that they're going to do, because all my Minnesota friends don't understand how far away Madison is from Minneapolis. So they're like, oh yeah, you're just over in Wisconsin. No, I'm 5 hours away.
Yep.
But he's like, hey, we're having a classifier match on Thursday. You want to come down? Or Friday or whatever it was. And I'm like, well, I was like, I mean, I'll take the day off work, you know, and he's like, well, you can't, we're having a limited optics classifier match. And I'm like, you know, cause like limited optics just went live and I'm all about that life and everything. So, and I was trying hard to get it. And so I took the day off work. I used frequent flyer miles. I flew from Madison to Minneapolis. I never fly from Madison to Minneapolis. I always, but I flew up there. I had my dad pick me up from the airport. Because they still live up there. Dropped me off at the range. Yeah. We helped set up the match. We shot through the match. And there was 4 stages, 4 classifiers. And we're getting it done, you know. And so got all the way to the end. Just not, you know, just executing, not doing the math. And get to the end. It's like, oh, all right, well, I got to get back to the airport, Timmy. So he's like, well, you want me to do the math and see if you made it? Yeah, sure. So I'm like packing up all my stuff. I mean, I checked a bag with a pistol and 500 rounds of ammo. So like, that's all I have in my little, but I'm packing it all up again. He's like, you did it. He's like, 95.5%. You're a GM, buddy. And I felt so relieved. I was like, oh, I was like, man, I'm tired.
I think I'll go home now.
I'll go home now.
Dude,
I had a repeated stress injury in my hand from all the reloads.
Common.
Thumb. I was like, oh my God, I need to step it back a notch. I need to heal a little bit. I did it. I did it.
Dude, I'm so happy for you to have achieved that. Well done. Well done. And then, the fact that you just said you're middle-aged and your dad took you to the match is hilarious.
I know, right? My dad's awesome.
He's great.
But, but yeah, no sooner than a week later, Memorial Day weekend, I was out, riding dirt bikes by myself, trail riding, and, I tire tapped a swamp mat. My foot slid off the peg.
What the hell does that mean?
If you ride, you know. But I was kind of wheeling through something.
Mm.
And a swamp mat is a wood thing that they put like where there would be a puddle so that it doesn't
go
to a mud pit. So kind of holds all the stuff together. But anyway, just got kicked kind of sideways. My foot slipped off the peg and hit the ground. I had done 21 miles of single track riding on the dirt bike trail. I was on the four-wheeler trail a mile and a half from the parking lot heading back to my truck, just playing around on a wide four-wheeler trail. But four-wheeler trails are packed hard as a rock. So my foot hit the ground and got twisted away. It's not supposed to go. Dislocated my knee and fractured my tibial plateau.
Oh, man.
A week later, I'm a mile and a half from my truck alone. Had to call for help. I had a plan for all this, but they're still a half hour away. And then I realized, like, well, once they get here, they still have to find me. So with a dislocated knee, I didn't crash. Key point. I didn't crash. I stopped. I was like, ow, that hurt. And I got off to check myself. And when I put weight on my right leg, that was when I realized I had a problem because it didn't work. So with one leg, I got my bike stood up again. I somehow got on it and first gear rode a mile and a half to the parking lot and laid next to my truck waiting to get picked up and brought to the ER. Long story short, two surgeries, 6 nights in the hospital, 6-inch plate, 9 screws, stitches, and no weight bearing for 12 weeks.
Ah, Jesus.
Memorial Day weekend, shooting season over.
A week after you got your GM card.
Yep.
Man. Yep.
So if anyone's watching, that's why I'm sitting weird because. But.
So, I mean, that just goes back to what you said earlier is like, you never know what's going to happen in your life. You know, and life is fleeting. Like you got to do these things now. You can't just like sitting around and wait for them.
And they say I should recover. I should be able to, they say I should recover. Okay. So at some point I'll probably be back, but there was no, especially laying there in the hospital, there was no guarantee of that.
Mm-hmm.
And also just being an intelligent person, you know that, you know, once they do surgery on a joint, it's never the same.
Yeah.
So there was that thought in my mind, but at the same time in my mental space was like, I know what it takes to execute at GM level. I can get there again because I know what it feels like. So I can get there again. The mental space, if I hadn't done it yet and was laying there in the hospital, man, that would be some heavy stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Work through. Not saying that this isn't heavy, but that would have been heavier.
Yeah.
For sure. But you know, there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee. So if it's something you want to do right now, you gotta figure out what it is you want to do. You gotta figure out what all in looks like. And you gotta get started on that yesterday. The best time to start was yesterday. The next best is today. If you say tomorrow, you're kidding yourself. Start today. And you can absolutely achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve.
Prep and Press is proud to be a part of the Firearms Radio Network. If you like this type of content, help us grow the show and the shooting sports by sharing with a friend. Just open the podcast app you're using right now and hit that share button. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the range.